Okay, I'd like to bring to order the meeting of the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Hub Center. We're going to get an official welcome from Willie Nesbitt, who's going to talk a little more about the center. We're going to do a little bit of business here, and then we'll have you on in just a second. Members, thank you for taking time to be here. It's our normal committee time, but it's important to be here and to learn more about ABE. And to the students that are here and the teachers that are here, thank you for coming. We'll be very interested in hearing more about ABE and hearing your viewpoints and your perspectives. So we appreciate you being with us today. For our agenda today, we are first going to have an overview of the Hub Center. Then we're going to have a presentation on the history of the Hub Center. Then we are going to put Representative Mary Murphy's bill next. And then last will be Representative Winkler's bill. So the agenda has changed just a little bit. Also, I would like if we could approve the minutes. Let's see. Representative Trans, have you read the minutes?
Yes, I have.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative Trans moves the minutes for our last meeting, February 20th. Those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The minutes are approved. With that, we'll proceed with Mr. Nesbitt, who is right here. Welcome to, do you want to sit at the testifying table?
You think I need to?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Makes it more formal that way, but,
that
you know,
I'll
probably hear you better. And
sounds really good.
Welcome to the committee, if you could state your name for the record and proceed
Certainly.
With your comments.
My name is Willie Nesbitt. I'm currently Executive Director of Community Education for St. Paul Public Schools. And we are extremely proud of the Ron Hub Center for Lifelong Learning, where you sit now, and very thankful to all of you for providing us and our students and community members this opportunity to see and learn what you do. So, you know, it's really a privilege for us to host this, and we always thank you whenever we have this opportunity. So we've got a lot of students here, students at the Ron Hub Center for Lifelong Learning, which opened its doors in 1994, represent 113 different countries. All adults, we have quite a few things in the center. We'd invite you, if not today, at some other opportunity to take a tour of the Hub Center to learn more about what we do here. Primarily, adult learning, including ELL, English Language Learning, Adult Basic Ed, which covers GED, classes, classes for students who want to come back to school and try out their skills, see what their skill levels are. We also have a large supplemental services program for adults with disabilities. Large deaf population here with an international audience. So it is an intriguing place, the Hub Center. We think that we contribute tremendously to workforce development and the stability of the workforce in this community by allowing folks to, especially immigrants, new Americans, to achieve English proficiency and be able to enter the workforce. Now, I was promised that there is a hook for those of us who talk too long, so if it's appropriate, I can certainly entertain any questions, but otherwise, welcome here to the Hub Center, and thank you very much for choosing us as a host.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think, were there any quick questions? I think we'll proceed at this point, and if some come up, we may call you up at some point, so
thank you so much.
Good. Next, I'd like to call on Representative Bly to come up for the presentation of the history of the Hub Center. And we are very excited to be here also because most of the time we're in the same hearing room that looks like all of our other hearing rooms. And so it's good for us to get out of the Capitol and to get into the community and to be with you today. Welcome to the committee. Representative Bly, if you could state your name for the record.
Yes, Representative David Bly. Thank you, Madam Chairman. One small correction on the notes here. It's not just a history of the Hub Center, but they've actually done a history of ABE in Minnesota and a history of ABE in St. Paul. And I'm here and invited the authors here. And unfortunately, Deborah Simmons is also a co-author and was unable to be here at this date. But I'm here primarily because of my friendship with Ben Bryant, and I wanted you to know that when I would stop and visit over the summer with Ben Bryant, he would always be working on this history, and it was a great accomplishment to see it finished. And I'm sure he's very proud, and I am too, of the work that he did. And I'm also proud of the fact that I think probably both Bella and Ben are walking histories of AVE, and so it's good to have it finally on paper so that we can know the history and carry it on beyond the time that they're with us. So thank you, and I'll turn it over to Bella.
Thank you, Representative Bly.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record, we're officially taping the meeting. And I just have to ask, too, is it one of these documents we have?
It's these two.
These two, okay. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Bella Hansen. As Representative Bly said, Ben Bryant and I wrote a 40-year history of ABE in St. Paul last year. We thought that was such a good idea that he and I, along with Deb Simmons, decided to write a 40-year history of ABE in Minnesota. You have received copies of each of these histories from Representative Bly's office. Among the three of us, we have more than 75 years of ABE experience in Minnesota. Ben and I were supervisors in the St. Paul ABE program, and Deb Simmons was the manager of the Literacy Training Network. We know that we have given you a lot to read. Our purpose in giving you copies of the histories is to let you know how well ABE programs in Minnesota have used the resources that you have provided ABE over the last 40 years. I want to call attention to three pages in particular in the Minnesota ABE history. If you don't have it with you, you could just jot down the pages when you get back. Page 170 shows how many adults have received GED diplomas the past 40 years. These statistics indicate that about 10% of all high school graduates in Minnesota in recent years have been GED graduates. Page 176, this page shows how many adults have been enrolled in ABE and GED and ESL programs over the past 40 years. These statistics indicate that in recent years, enrollment has reached 80,000 per year. The third page, page 195, shows what it costs to instruct adult students in ABE programs. These statistics indicate that in recent years, the cost has been about $500 per student per year. Thank you for allowing us some of your time on your agenda and for receiving copies of our histories.
Thank you, and thank you for documenting this. And welcome to the committee. Is Mr. Bryant? Okay, well, thank you for coming up. Next, we'll have Representative Mary Murphy's bill. And members, I wonder, maybe we want to introduce ourselves for and staff, for folks in the room, just so they get a perspective of how about your name, where you're from, and how long you've been in the legislature or with the staff. Why don't we start over here? We might have to pass the mic around. Does that help you?
Is it on?
Yeah.
My name is Mike Valu, and I'm the Republican researcher for this committee. I've been with the House. This is my ninth year in various capacities. And I live in Maplewood.
My name is Lynn Wardlow. I'm from Eagan, Minnesota. I'm a retired teacher, retired Marine, and this is my third term. And I'm on three education committees.
I'm Representative Rob Eastland. I'm from the Cambridge-Isandy area just north of the metro. I've been in the legislature for three terms. This is my fourth term, just beginning.
My name is Patrick Garofalo. I was just elected to my second term in the Minnesota House of Representatives. I'm a Republican state representative, although my entire family are Democrats. So I joke with my mom that I'm adopted, but she says no, that when I was born, the doctor dropped me on my head.
I'm Carolyn Lane, and this is my first term. I come from Columbia Heights, Fridley area.
My name is Scott Kranz. I am a public high school teacher. I am a representative from Blaine, and this is my first term. My dad teaches in the St. Paul schools, though, Humboldt High School.
I'm Erin Murphy, and I am from St. Paul. My district starts just on the other side of Lexington Avenue, so we're just about in it. And I am a registered nurse and a freshman.
My name is Emily Adrians, and I'm the fiscal analyst for the committee, and this is my first legislative session, so I'm excited to be here.
I'm Trish Kiefer. I am the committee legislative assistant, and I, too, am brand new.
I'm Nora Slawick, and I'm in my fifth term, and I'm from Maplewood. I also want to take just a second and thank the staff. I'm here for setting this up today. It's a big deal for us to come offset, and your staff as well, for setting this up, so we very much appreciate it.
I'm Sarah Benspofer. I'm the committee administrator, and this is my first time in the House.
I'm Danielle Lemire. I'm the House Research Analyst, and this is my eighth session.
And I'm Representative David Bly from House District 25B, Northfield and Belle Plaine, and this is my first term.
I'm Representative Sandra Peterson from New Hope, Plymouth, and Crystal. I represent those three areas. And I'm also a teacher, worked with preschool through high school, most of my time in high school, but never ABE, so this is an interesting day for me.
I'm Patty Fritz, and I'm from Faribault, Minnesota. I represent parts of Rice and Steele County, and I'm also a nurse, and this is my second term.
I am Representative John Ward from District 12A, which is Brainerd, Baxter, Crosby, Ironton, Nisswa, that central Minnesota area. I'm also a retired teacher that did ABE, taught ABE in a prison. This is a much more beautiful setting.
My name is Ryan Winkler. I represent District 44B, which is a portion of St. Louis Park and Golden Valley. And this is my first term, which I guess means we've been here about 6 weeks now.
I'm Mary Murphy. I represent parts of St. Louis and Carlton County in northeastern Minnesota. This is my 16th term, and I'm chair of Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Committee, which is the overreaching or overarching committee over K-12, higher education, and workforce development, and early childhood learning. And we're hoping that we can reduce some of the barriers between the individual committees and start looking beyond for lifetime learning opportunities. And so it's really good to hear some of that history. I've long been an advocate for adult basic education, and one of the reasons is exactly what was pointed out on those 170 pages. They get the best bang for their buck in learning that we have in the state, and we need many more opportunities. It was also fun to see the Thomasonis here and to see a teacher here, Teresa Miller, who lobbies me frequently about the needs, and she was brought to my attention the disappointment in the community when the diploma education program had to be transferred, or the people had to go other places if they wanted their diploma instead of their GED. And maybe someday we can get that back.
Hi, I'm Brad Kelly, and I'm a research consultant for the House TFL Caucus. I live in St. Paul in Mack Groveland, and I've been with the House for 4 years.
Good. Well, thank you. Next we'll have House File 613. For consideration. Representative Murphy, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
I don't know, Madam Chair, if I can do that.
As an ex officio member? Do we need staff? Do we have an interpretation? Or should we just, maybe should I move your bill?
I would appreciate that, Madam
Chair.
Okay,
the chair moves House File 613 be recommended to pass to the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and review your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Murphy, and I thank you for the foresight to bring us here out in the community. It's a good thing. House File 613 was brought to me because there's a need. It's a technical amendment, and there's a need to correct. But before we do that, in your packets, I believe, is an amendment 613A1, which changes the number on line 1.11 to 37486000.
Representative Murphy has an author's amendment labeled 613A1. I will move it to put the bill in the form that the author wants. And is there any discussion? And everybody's got the amendment. Hearing none, those in favor, motion by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Murphy,
Madam
please
Chair,
present your bill.
Members of the committee, as I said, this is a technical amendment so that the proper amount of money can be appropriated for this year to the adult basic program. And with me is Thomas Melchior of Department of Education, and I think he will concur.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Tom Melcher. I'm the Finance Director at the Department of Education, and I'm here to provide a little bit of background about the bill. The 2006 legislature enacted a 3% increase in the adult basic education funding formula beginning in fiscal year 2007, this current fiscal year, that added about $1 million onto the level of funding for adult basic education programs. And there is a statutory level of funding for the program. So the statute was amended to add the 3% increase, and then it's an ongoing 3% each year after that. Unfortunately, as this was being put together at the end of the 2006 legislative session, while all of the legislative tracking documents included the 3% increase, and it was paid for as part of the calculations, the section of the bill that was to have amended the appropriation section did not get included in the bill. So what we currently have is a situation where the statute clearly directs the department to calculate adult basic education aid with the 3% increase included. However, the amount of money that has actually been appropriated for this purpose is short 3%. And as a result of that, we are currently prorating the adult basic education aid at about a 97% level. Because this is a forecasted program, as part of the November budget forecast, we've calculated what it would cost to fund the program according to statute. And those numbers are reflected in the planning estimates that are being used for the budget. So the money is there, but it hasn't been appropriated. And because of that, we have a very difficult situation where the aid is currently being prorated and it's not flowing out to the programs that are providing the service. Now, the normal thing that happens with a forecasted program like this, when there is an error or a change in the forecast, is that we would include the correction in the forecast bill. We have a general forecast bill that essentially updates all of the appropriations, and normally that would come out after the February forecast. Unfortunately, because the academic year is more than half over, we're running into a concern where the dollars that are flowing out are not where they should be, and that's creating some concerns among the providers of the adult basic education programs. They're getting a little worried as to whether they're actually going to get the funding that was promised in the last legislative session. And it would be very reassuring to the providers if the legislature move this as a separate piece of legislation so that the dollars would be available before the end of the legislative session in May. And that's the reason why this is coming out as a separate bill as opposed to being part of the omnibus bill. The same correction is also included in the governor's biennial budget bill for education. So this is reflected not only in the planning estimates. It's also reflected in the governor's budget bill. In that bill, you'll see an appropriation for 2007, which matches what Representative Murphy has in this bill as amended.
Okay. Thank you. Well, in essence, this is a technical bill.
Yes.
but is very much needed in terms of finding our members. Are there any questions at this point? Representative Peterson? If you could grab a mic here, because of the meeting's being taped, so we appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just looked the other night online and noticed that the federal government has a funding stream into adult basic education, and it looked to me as if they were going to be cutting back or not giving as much money to the adult basic education. I know this doesn't deal with your technical bill for this year, but you mentioned the governor's budgeted amount. Does his budgeted amount take into consideration the possibility of declining dollars from the federal government?
Mr. Melcher?
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, no, the governor's budget is based on current law, which provides for an annual 3% increase in the state funding for adult basic education, but there has not been any additional appropriation recommended to adjust for any potential decrease in federal funding. Barry Schaefer is here as well and perhaps could provide some additional insights into that if the committee would so please.
I don't know if we want to take time for that today, but I think that is an issue. It looks like they may not, and of course the federal government hasn't made their decision yet, so thank you.
Yeah, I think that it's a good point, Representative Peterson, and that we know from the Federal Deficit Reduction Act that we're going to be facing numerous problems when the federal budget, if it comes, a lot of these programs may come in down. A lot of our members are on Health and Human Services. It's going to hit a lot of the programs there, and they could come to the state for funding, so it will be interesting to see what happens. Is there any further discussion? Okay. With that, hearing none, I renew my motion that House File 613 be recommended to pass pass to the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The bill passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Representative Winkler. I hope you're going to explain your visual aid. Welcome to the committee, Representative Winkler. Now, I know you have a number of testifiers, and so if you want to, move your bill to get it before us, and then I know you're going to be, I think either you or your testifier will be calling up the various testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File 979, and I believe that would be for a layover and consideration in an omnibus bill.
Okay. Representative Winkler moves House File 979 for possible inclusion in omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill.
And Madam Chair, I do have an amendment to the bill, but I think it can be taken up at a later point. It's just a technical change from commission to commissioner. We could even do it on an oral basis, I think.
Would you like to move it as an oral amendment?
Yeah, I think that would be adequate. If we go to page 2, line 8.
Page 2, line 8, okay.
The third word is commission. And the oral amendment would be to change that term to commissioner.
Could the staff repeat that, the change, or who would be the...
Madam Chair, it is page 2, line 8. Delete the word commission and insert commissioner.
Okay, thank you. Are there any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor of the oral amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to talk very briefly, then I thought we could go into testimony, and then I'll have some concluding remarks and possibly a comment from Dr. Schaefer.
Sounds great.
The ABE bill in front of you, House File, I just kicked over my visual aid. 979 is essentially to increase adult basic education state aid by $10 million in 08-09, which has the primary effect of eliminating waiting lists for GED programs, English learning, English language learning, and basic skills learning programs. ABE is an economic issue. Employers identify the lack of qualified workers as the biggest barrier to economic growth in Minnesota. 400,000 workers in Minnesota over the age of 25 lack high school diplomas, and that lack of a high school diploma has a direct impact on their earning capacity, and it has a limiting effect on Minnesota's ability to develop human capital that we need as one of the key sources of economic growth. ABE is also an early childhood education issue, and this is the at least so named Early Childhood Education Committee, though we also deal with adult basic education. And it's an early childhood education issue because the education level of mothers is the biggest influence on children's academic and school achievement. ABE also reaches those families with children who are at most at greatest risk of falling into the achievement gap. And so by targeting ABE programs, we are in fact reaching a goal of assisting at-risk youth, which is, or at-risk kids, which is the kind of universal principle that I think all early childhood experts would agree on. But I think ABE is primarily a human issue. F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote that there are no second acts in American lives. And my feeling is that he should have spent more time here in his hometown of St. Paul and at the Hub Center or whatever the historical antecedent was. Because ABE really does, I think, represent a second act for many people, whether they are people who didn't go and get a high school diploma the first time around, whether they are immigrants to this country and are looking to improve their English language, or they are people who are trying to improve their basic adult skills in order to have a second act. The purpose of this bill is really to open the curtain on the second act for many people. So I would urge your approval and vote for the bill, and look forward to some, I think, testimony will show what those second acts look like.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Tom Citrin-Heisem, and I'm representing Literacy Minnesota, which is a statewide advocacy group for adult basic ed, and I also work as the facilitator for the St. Paul Community Literacy Consortium. Just want to second a few additional facts in addition to what Representative Winkler already shared with us, that we have approximately 200,000 foreign-born individuals in the state of Minnesota, and many of them lack the basic English skills that they need to be successful in the workplace as well as to be able to support their families and care for their children. I don't remember if I mentioned when I testified a couple of weeks ago, I may have, forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but just a very few weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal reported on a major study that showed a serious decline in employee literacy forecasted for the next 25 years. And they talked about three major problems leading to this shifting labor market that rewards skills, education and skills, changing demographics, and an achievement gap in reading and math. And a major recommendation was to increase involvement in adult basic ed. Also wanted to mention that in terms of the early childhood aspects of ABE, that our public schools are reporting growing numbers of parents whose lack of basic skills is a really major barrier to being able to help their children as well as communicate with school staff and deal with the problems that their children encounter now and again in school. Something else I ran across, which I thought it's not commonly thought of, but I thought was very interesting, is that the impact of ABE on people in the correctional system is becoming an increasingly major thing. 70% of the prisoners in correctional institutions in the U.S. score in the bottom two literacy levels under the National Adult Literacy, in the National Adult Literacy Survey. And we found that raising the educational levels of the inmates actually reduces recidivism. A Virginia study found that of a sample of 3,000 inmates, 49% of those who did not participate in educational programs were reincarcerated compared to only 20% of those who did participate. And as of December in our own state, there were just over 2,000 offenders, almost 27% of all the incarcerated adults in Minnesota, who did not have a verified high school diploma or GED and were eligible for ABE. It's interesting to note that corrections, although we don't think of this, is actually the third largest consortia in the state. in terms of the number of ABE hours that it provides. And consortia are the umbrella groups through which ABE funds flow to the various communities and interest areas. I think that Dr. Schaefer a few weeks ago talked a little bit about, gave you a briefing on ABE and what it includes, so I won't talk a lot about that, other than to note that we served over 80,000 Minnesotans last year, which was a 78% increase over the past 10 years. One in every 11 diplomas in Minnesota is issued through ABE. And that Minnesota passed all the federal achievement goals, surpassed the federal achievement goals for the past 3 years. One of the examples I'd like to quote, though, that sort of gets down to the grassroots level that shows what we're able to accomplish is many of you know that there's a shortage of people, workers in the healthcare industry increasingly. And many of many people are trying to get into CNA, Certified Nursing Assistant programs. The Hub Center, as in common with many ABE programs around the state, is trying to help their students prepare for those programs. They recently graduated 19 students. Some were American-born, some were from other countries, in a preparatory course that taught them vocabulary, reading skills, and background knowledge. Those people then went on to the Red Cross CNA training itself at East Metro OIC, and all 19 of them passed, which is unprecedented according to the Red Cross. That just doesn't happen. And when the staff visited the nursing home where those students were doing their clinical placement, the staff there said they were thrilled, and their message was, please send more students. We need them. So I think that's a really direct example of how ABE not only helps individuals and families, but really helps employers provide the basic services that our citizens need. Wanted to talk just briefly about how underfunding threatens us. Other than the 3% increase that we were voted but didn't receive this year, we had so far have not received, hope we do. Our funding has been flat for 3 years following an allotment 4 years ago. And the demand has continued to grow. We've continued to stretch our resources to the point where the average hourly reimbursement rate has fallen 35% since 2001. And 15 consortia were actually capped at the growth factor last year. In other words, they provided so many hours of service, they simply couldn't get reimbursed for all of it because there wasn't the money. And the way we have coped temporarily is through some very creative ways of raising money in the short term from foundations, from other means. Those are all exhausted at the end of this year. So if we don't get some additional funding into the system, we really will see not only increased waiting lists, but more basic services that are now being provided will be cut back. I also think it's important to note that the Governor's Workforce Development Council report in 2006 supported an increase in base ABE funding and to restore growth to, quote, accelerate English language acquisition, which is critical to the integration of Minnesota's immigrant and refugee population into the state's workforce. And the subcommittee, the Refugee Committee, recommended a 25% funding increase, which unfortunately did not make it into the governor's budget. But there is a lot of concern and support in the GWBC for increased funding. Like to conclude by just mentioning briefly what if we were lucky enough to be able to receive this additional funding, what are some of the things that we would be able to accomplish? In order to determine this, we did a written survey of there's 50-odd consortia around the state. And approximately 30 of them responded in writing and talked about specifically what they would do or be able to do in terms of additional services and waiting lists and so on. I had the fun job of going through all 30 of those and trying to find all the commonalities and so on. The two main themes were that they would be able to work through the waiting lists, which have grown to several thousand in the metro area, to the point where many programs are simply not maintaining waiting lists anymore because it just doesn't make sense to. And it would expand the intensity of classes. All the studies have shown that the greater the intensity of services, the more effective they are. So if you're learning English, going to a class 12 to 20 hours a week, you're going to learn English much more quickly than if you only go 2 or 4 or 6 hours a week, which is often the case. The specific things that came up repeatedly in the survey were that they would expand the intensity of ESL classes and the number of classes, and they would add year-round classes. In many parts of the state, they are not able to have year-round classes because funding is inadequate. We would be able to improve the transitions to higher education, working more with community colleges to help. Many of the people we work with are nobody in their family has ever gone to college, and especially those who are foreign-born, it's very difficult to make that transition. So we're trying very hard through the Department of Education, working with them, to ease that transition. But lack of funding makes it very difficult to establish the kinds of working relationships that we need to have with colleges to be able to make that happen. GED preparation, outreach and expanded preparation and outreach would be expanded. Another major theme was expanding workforce preparation, such as the CNA training that I mentioned earlier. Tremendous emphasis on computer instruction. Even the most basic jobs seem to increasingly require technological skills and abilities. So many programs are saying they would like to add computer labs and they would like to augment their computer instruction. Other things that would happen would be more specialized outreach, such as to those with disabilities. Many of our programs serve a large number of people with disabilities, but we still are not beginning to reach all those who need that kind of help. Further staff training and development to make sure that all of our staff are constantly brought up to speed on the most recent research. And finally, just stopping the downward spiral of staff and service cuts, which is being voiced repeatedly by consortia as a major concern. So just in conclusion to my comments, I'd just like to emphasize that without added funding, many programs statewide will face funding cuts next year just due to the accumulated effects of flat funding. And with this funding, programs will be able to maintain and enhance current programming, strengthening and expanding services to eliminate waiting lists and improve the effectiveness of all programming. That is the end of my prepared remarks. If it's all right with you, could I call a couple of speakers?
We do have a couple questions.
Sure.
And I know members, we're going to have some of the students coming up, so of course, I hope the students are expecting questions. We'll be maybe asking the students some questions too, but I think we have some questions for you or Representative Winkler as well. Representative Grafflo?
Well, Madam Chair, why don't we, in the interest, if we have okay.
Yeah, I think that would be good, and I think we'll have time probably to come back. Representative Wardlow. Okay, thank you. Okay, and with that, do you want to have Ms. Schlick or
sure.
some of the students or?
If I could ask Deborah Schlick, who's the executive director of Affirmative Options and statewide coalition that works on poverty issues related to MFEP and other sorts of poverty-related issues, that she can explain much better than I can.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Deborah Schlick. I'm the director of the Affirmative Options Coalition. We're a coalition of 50 organizations from throughout the state of Minnesota who advocate for policies that are effective at creating opportunities to move out of poverty. Our members include direct service organizations serving low-income Minnesotans, faith-based networks, and other advocacy organizations. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak today in support of House File 979 and wanted to make just a couple of brief points. I wanted to be able to brief this committee on work that's happening in the Health and Human Services Committees in both the House and the Senate around the Minnesota Family Investment Program and changes that are being made there to make it more possible for this program to meet federal targets and avoid federal penalties, the TANF block grant, which I know matters to this committee because some TANF funds flow here as well. There are three key things happening around access to training and education that are being proposed around the Minnesota Family Investment Program. The first is to drop a requirement that's been in place for a few years, requiring that parents on MFIP who pursue education also have to work 20 hours a week. That requirement would be dropped to allow a full 12 months of full-time participation in education training activities, and then after that point to combine work and training. The second is a proposal from the governor to drop limits that are currently set for parents on MFIP who are in ABE or ESL programs and right now have some arbitrary number of hours per week or proportion of their employment plan hours that they're allowed to spend in those activities, and the governor's proposal is to drop those limitations so that someone could pursue adult basic education, ESL, as a full-time activity.
Ms. Schlick, the provisions you're talking about are in other places than in 979, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So as long as...
Yes, nothing you have to vote on
okay.
or approve.
Well, as long as we can follow it and so forth, but if you want to proceed...
Yeah. And the final is that the governor proposes in their bills in the House and Senate that make sure that newly arrived immigrants have 6 to 12 months on state-supported assistance to spend full-time in English language classes to prepare for work activities, participation that wouldn't get credit under new federal rules. And the reason I am sharing these policy changes that are moving through other committees in the legislature is it will be great to get those policy changes, but they will not mean much if the participants face waiting lists to get into adult basic ed and ESL programs. So we think the work that you're considering here in the House File 979 could dovetail nicely with policy changes moving in the other committees. And finally, that it's a critical piece of an effective welfare-to-work program. 40% of the parents who turn to the cash assistance program in Minnesota don't have a high school diploma. So clearly, low skills is a large determiner of who needs to use this safety net. And that we're a state that's much better served that if families walk in the door looking for cash assistance, but leave that system a year or two later with more skills than they arrived with and less likelihood of re-returning to the program. And I wanted to also reiterate the point that about the link to most of your other work, which is early childhood work. A significant study done in the early 90s called the Child Outcome Study studied 3,000 parents on cash assistance in Atlanta, Georgia, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Riverside, California, and looked at what happened in those families who were placed on what's a Work First program and what happened when the parents were allowed to access training or education. Clearly, the employment outcomes were better, but as significant that the young children's school readiness outcomes 2 and 3 and 4 years later were measurably improved in the families where parents were allowed that access to training and education. So we very much hope to see support for House File 979. Thank you.
Thank you. I think there is a question. Representative Kranz? Okay. Wait, if you're able to stay around, and I'm not sure. Okay. Next, I think that Mr. Citrin Heisem is going to call up the testifiers because they're going to be in a slightly different order, members. So he'll tell us who's coming first.
Thank you. As most of you know, it's very difficult for adult learners to be able to come and testify. Many of them have jobs and work in addition to their classes, so they're working second shift. And just because of the time the community needs, it's very difficult for people from outstate to be able to come and testify. So I really just want to extend my appreciation to the students who were able to come today and speak to us. We have changed the order because adult learners' lives are very complicated and they have other commitments. Cam Pong will be our first testifier. She has a young child at home who's quite ill, so she was able to come in just for this. She was one of the students I mentioned earlier who participated in the CNA program and passed that. She fled Myanmar in 1997 as a refugee and arrived in the U.S. in 2001. And I would like just to ask her to come up if I could, please.
Well, thank you, and thank you for taking the time. We very much appreciate it. We understand.
I'm very happy to get a chance to speak with all of you.
Well, we're glad you're here, and hope your child feels better.
Thank you. My name is Kam. I'm from Burma or Myanmar. They have two names. Government changed the new name, Myanmar. So as a refugee, I live in refugee camp. Many years, and I moved to the United States 2001 in May. Okay. Yeah. So my path that lead me to the Heart Center is to learn more English and speaking and reading and getting GED. And also, I'm very thankful for Heart Center and U.S. government to change our life. My important adult learning that something can give me a better job and better life. For example, in nursing assistant class, I just graduated my CNA yesterday.
Ah, congratulations.
Thank you. Oh. Everybody graduate. Everybody passed their test.
Yay.
And very thankful for all teachers here and Heart Center and building. This building allow us to learn education, adult education.
Wonderful.
And my goal in my life is to go on to register nurse or nursing school and to save money and send my daughter to Harvard University. I know it's very hard, but I will try. And I have a very high goal and save more money to help poor children in my country. There are many, many sick children and HIV and AIDS children, no parent, they don't have parents, so because our government is very environment, so they don't allow other country to come and help our country. So they live in Thailand border and no food, no medication, no school. So my goal is also want to help poor children one day. Thank you for allowing me speaking and listen to me. Thank you for all.
Thank you.
Yes. Good night.
Do you want to see if there's questions? Are there any questions? We have two nurses that are legislators, Representative Murphy and Representative Fritz. And so, yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks again for coming in and appreciate you sharing your story. It's wonderful.
The second speaker we'd like to ask to come forward is Mohammed Ahmed from Marshall. And he's really shown tremendous faithfulness this week. This is the second time he's come from Marshall to St. Paul this week to speak about ABE. He spoke at our legislative forum on Tuesday, and he came back today. He's originally from Mogadishu, arrived in the late 90s as a refugee, is married and has two young children, and just recently obtained his GED and is employed full-time. So
I think that would be Representative Marty Seifer's district, is that right? Marshall,
yes.
Minnesota? Good. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. My name is Mohammed Ahmed from Marshall. I started learning English when I came to this country, and as well I was working, and it was hard for me, you know, to work and as well study. And finally, I got laid off in 2003 because of, you know, economic. And I decided to go to school again and get my GED. It was hard. And right away, I didn't find another job again. And again, it was hard to go and get my GED at the same time, go to school and go to work. And finally, last year, I get my GED. Now I'm planning to go to college. I have two kids, a daughter who's 5 years old, and a son 1.5 years old, and another one coming June. So it's really, very busy, as you see. Very busy. And appreciate the opportunity everybody gave me to study for free. And now I'm going to, I give back to my community, try to, give a lot of people to go to school and help them out. That's what I'm trying to do. Thank you. So.
Thank you. Can you tell us how long it took you to get your GED? And can you tell us where you're working? And
I work at Turkey Valley Farms in Marshall. And it took me since 2003 to get my GED. I have to study, do some pre-tests and all that, and it's kind of hard to do it right away, to work 10 hours and go to school at the same time, 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. So it was hard for me to, a lot of things, math especially, you got to understand all that. Math was the biggest, difficulty for me.
Mm-hmm. Other members, do you have other questions? Representative Ward? Microphone, if you can, so we can get it on the tape.
Congratulations, Mohammed, to you as well.
Thank you.
Can you tell us, now that you mentioned that you were going to college, are you currently attending college?
No, I just got it last year, December, my GED. I want to go to college, but I haven't decided. I think I'm going to study accounting.
So Madam Chair? And where do you hope to go to college?
I think I'll probably register SMSU, Southwest Minnesota State University.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
I have a point of, out of curiosity, if you're willing to share this, is when you got your GED, did it make a difference in your job at the turkey plant?
Yes, it made a difference. when you read and write, and when you, you know, you have that skill, you move up. And those who don't have that skill, they at the bottom. So it's really, it helped me a lot. And now I work in the office, so I moved up slowly.
Good. Representative Wardlow?
Again, congratulations from me also.
Thank you.
Since you've probably moved up because you acquired those skills, you're probably a leader amongst your peers in the, at where you work. And do you see some of them saying, I want to be like you?
Yes, a lot of them, I help them, I give them back, and they don't say, I want to be like you, but I try to, you know, encourage them, and they come up and they look up to me as they look up to get help from me. So I give them back what I learned. So.
Representative Wardlow?
Are any of them taking advantage of aid like you did? Are any of them going back to school like you did, trying to acquire the skills you have?
Yes. Some of them went to get their, I think they're trying to get the GED now. They're working and studying at the same time, so they're going through difficulties like I did myself. So I can, but they, some of them, they haven't went to college yet, but they're working towards that.
Representative Wardlow?
They are like you.
Yes, they are. So
in a different way. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, and we wish you success in your, as you work towards your college studies and with your new one on the way, and I appreciate you coming all the way from Marshall.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I'd like to call up Tierno Baldi from Guinea, who started ABE in December, just a little over a year ago, and has two children.
No children.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good evening. My name is Tierno Baldi. I'm from Guinea. I have been here 1 year and a half. I've been in this school 1 year, 2 months. I work at Mississippi Market full time. I start in the morning, 4 o'clock to 12 o'clock. After this, I come here to study full time. Afternoon classes and evening classes. And then I want to improve my English and to go to college to and university to study business international. And then I am a board director in another school too.
I'm not sure if I caught that last word.
Can you speak in what you say?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And thank you for giving me this opportunity. And thank you for supporting all the immigrants to get free English. This is very, very important for my life.
Well, thank you. Can you tell us, when did you have your job at the Mississippi Market and then you decided to get your GED, and kind of why you decided, or did you have friends that did it, or?
No, I studied in my country. I finished high school. But it's not in English. I did this in French, in Arabic. And then I want to go to college, but I don't have enough English. And then I saw this school, it's free. Mm-hmm. I want to approve here my English before I take my subject and technical college, and then I move to university.
Which university do you want to go to, or have you decided? Or
I want to go to Minnesota University or University of Minnesota.
Good. Members, any questions? Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to know how you got to Minnesota or why you came to Minnesota.
The first time I came here, my wife's from here, and then she visited here a couple years ago. She had a friend, and then when we came here the first time, her friend called her, if you want to live with us, with your husband, you can come here. This is why the first time I came here. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, members? Thank you for sharing your story, and we wish you luck with your studies and with college.
Thank you very much.
I think in listening to the students, you can understand why many of us just feel it's such a privilege to be able to work in this field. And I'm also always amazed by the different stories that people bring and the different needs that they bring. And that's one of the things that makes ABE really unique. It's not like being in elementary school where everybody's in first grade and second grade and so on, but we have people who are very well educated in the countries they came from but don't speak English. We also have people who never, and many people who never had the opportunity even to go to primary school in their own countries because of war and famine and political upheaval and so on. So one of the things we are able generally to do in ABE, as much as funds allow, is to be able to tailor the instruction to the needs of the individual students. And that's something we believe very strongly in. We have just two more students who would like to speak. The next one is Semenyo Ali from Togo, who started ABE just about 6-7 months ago in June 2006, and had come to the U.S. about a year before then.
Okay, thank you. Members, what we'll do is have the testimony and ask some questions, and then we'll come back to the first questions, if that's all right, and by 5:30. Well, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Semenyo Ali, and I'm from Togo. I came to the United States at the end of September 2005. Yeah, I came here because of my family have problems with the government. And then we moved to the Ghana, where we were refugees over there. So when my brother came here, he wants to live together. So I came here. So, but when I first came, I have an opportunity to go to high school at a humble high school. But when I get to 21, when I have 21 years old, they just say I can't stay at the school. So, but I have a plan for my life to become a doctor one day and help people in my country. So, I say, if I don't have to go to school, how will I attain my goal? So, and my counselor told me that they're going to transfer me to a hope center so I can continue the school. But when I came here, they told me that they already canceled a high school program, so I have to continue in JD program. So when I continue it, it helped me a lot because like in my country we speak French, and I have English like my third language. So when I first came, it was difficult for me to speak English, but now when I start coming to Hub Center with adult basic education, I think my English is getting better. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank the U.S. government for helping immigrants to have an education, because if we don't have education, it's like, how can we help our kids in the future? Because what we are doing today is to prepare our kids' future and have an opportunity to take care of our families, because we have our brother or sister who live in back home, and they still having problem. Like in my country, if you can go to school, but if you have like you don't like the government, you can go to school and still get no job. You know, you don't have opportunity to work or whatever. So when I was here, today I'm very happy. Even if I'm not working, my plan is to finish this school and get my GED, go to college and go to university, and then continue my medical school so I can attend my goal one day. That's why I'm here. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I ask you a question. How far along in the program are you? So you went to the high school, and the high school had a high school program, and then when you turned 21, then they asked you to move here to go to the high school program here, and that was cut, and then you went to doing the GED program?
Yeah.
Is it?
Well, yeah, when I came, I went to, my brother took me to one place where I took the test, and they put me in 12th grade in a high school, but at the end of the year, my counselor told me that it's like before I get there, my brother told the supervisor that he want me to make like 2 years there. So, but when the end of the year, my counselor said no. According to the law of the school, at 21 years you can't stay at the school again. So that's why I was transferred to Health Center.
Okay. So, okay, thank you. Are there any questions, Representative Kranz?
Thanks, Rancho. This is actually something that not very many people know about, and it's a growing need. I mean, how we address it is one thing that we need to be concerned with. But there are a lot of students. When I started at Spring Lake Park High School, which is in the north suburbs, back in 94, we had virtually no cases of this. And now I would say, even in a suburban district like ours, we have half a dozen to a dozen students that are with us for a brief period of time. When they hit 21, they really want to stay, but state law doesn't allow it. Mm-hmm. And so at the age of 21, then we send them out, but they're not prepared yet. And so they have to go into other programs like the Hub Center here. So it really does fit a need. I think when we think of adult basic education, we think of older adults. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of students who come to us from other parts of the world, 19, 20 years old, and we put them into the school system for a period of time, but they just, you know, for a number of reasons, aren't ready to graduate yet. And so they have to continue their education in other places. So I have experience with that and wanted to speak to it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Sounds like a good bill idea maybe, huh? Representative Kranz, we'll see you. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
And then our final, Madam Chair, committee members, our final speaker, it's a little bit different story. Tina Linton, who is an adult diploma student at the Hub Center, native-born American, survivor of domestic abuse, and a very strong advocate for her fellow students. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Tina Linton. I'm a single mother of five. Madam Chair, State Representatives, I thank you very much for coming. I'm a current student at the Hub Center. Ooh, I can advocate for millions, but when it comes to your personal story, it gets kind of touchy. I'm here today at the Hub Center. Actually, I want to say the Hub Center literally saved my life. Being a single mom, I was in a position that I was tired of just running into dead-end jobs, just, you know, one hurdle after another. And coming up in poverty, didn't have the opportunity to complete my high school education. I remember laying in the bed and just saying, God, I am tired. I am sick and tired of being sick and tired of being a single mom, all the things that was around me. Oh, excuse me. So in my spirit, it said, get up and go to school. At that point, I came to the Hub Center, and I do a lot around the Hub Center because it literally saved my life. The adult diploma education that I got in just gave me the opportunity today to have the skills, not just for my kids. I kind of lost my older kids being a single working mom in the educational field. I have two younger kids that I needed to survive. I needed to save their lives. And coming back to school gave me the opportunity to enhance my skills where I can enhance their skills. So I can say that these programs really work and we really do need them. And without the Hub Center, I can't tell you where I would be at right now. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So you have your GED now?
I'm in the adult diploma. I'm in the adult diploma program. I will get my adult diploma in June. I plan to go to college to be a psychologist.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you. You members, any questions? Representative Fritz, if you can use the microphone, Representative Fritz, it would be appreciated.
Well, I just want to congratulate you and to have five children and to come for help for yourself and your children is very, very important, and I wish you all the very best. And none of us have walked in your shoes, but you are certainly moving in the right direction in education, and the center is getting you there, so I applaud your efforts. Continue.
Thank you. I do want to say my oldest son that went to got to his senior year in high school, didn't complete it, he walked through these doors last week to get his GED.
Oh,
so I am living an example for my family and for my community.
Oh,
thank you.
We had, in my community, we had a grandmother and a young woman graduate at the same time with their program, which I thought was really interesting. So. I think we do have some questions. I think if you're able to stay,
yeah, I am.
We'll see. And I'm not sure who they're for exactly here. Representative Garofalo, you still have questions? Is it on? There we go. She's our technology expert on the committee.
Yeah, obviously. Madam Chair, I'm sorry I forgot your name. I'm sorry, but. The budget increase we're looking for here is a little bit over 20%. Can you tell us, in terms of, you mentioned several priorities, and one of them was reducing the waiting lists. Can you give us some rough numbers on a percentage basis, how many more people, roughly, that you would anticipate being able to serve?
Mr. Citrin-Hyson.
Representative Garofalo and Chair, Committee. I haven't done the calculations specifically on how many additional students we would be able to serve. Barry Schaefer from the Department of Ed might be better able to address that. I do know that, as I mentioned, we have several thousand people on waiting lists. We believe we would be able to work through those waiting lists and not build any additional waiting lists for the foreseeable future. One of the realities is that a number of years ago, around 2000, when the new funding formula was adopted, there was, at that point, an 8% annual increase in funding if there was an equivalent increase in numbers of people needing services and services provided. And so when that, because of the budget crisis, was taken away, we lost that ability to grow in response to the community need. So what we're hoping at this point we would be able to do is make up some of that lost ground and be able to serve those people who have not been able to receive services in the past. I certainly would be able to be very happy to do some research and get back to you later about specific numbers of students because I don't have that information with me today.
Representative Garofalo?
Madam Chair, that's okay. It's just that, again, this is a rough estimate, and I respect the fact that you'd have, with an increase in funding, you'd have a choice between, as you said, the intensity of classes offered versus serving more people. So I'm imagining there's a certain amount of discretion. I was looking for a ballpark figure, an approximation, and I certainly am not going to hold you to it.
Mr. Schaefer, I think, might have an answer for that. I actually am interested in the waiting lists and where they are, because, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see if they correlate with the child care waiting lists by county, if you have them by county. Welcome to the committee, if you could state your name for the record.
My name is Barry Schaefer. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education, and I'm the state adult basic education director. Waiting lists are a very interesting phenomena. We do have, as Mr. Sitram-Hysom mentioned, probably over 1,000 people, specifically in the metro area, waiting for services. And then as various conditions change, like MFIP requirements, et cetera, that number ebbs and flows. As you pointed out, Representative, that we do anticipate with additional money that I would say 90% of our waiting lists would be covered. So I'm saying 900 to 1,000 additional students would probably be served in the coming year that weren't, you know, that were on waiting lists. Additionally, programs all across the state would benefit from increased intensity of services. Mostly, you know, and in particular, our rural programs, our smaller programs, operating on one night a week, often maybe a daytime class or a nighttime class for 3 hours, have told us through surveys that they would double or triple their intensity given the additional money when we work with Literacy Minnesota on that survey. So we've got both things going. We've got a waiting list probably of around 1,000. And then we have intensity of services statewide. I would think every program would increase program opportunity in terms of intensity of services for the existing students. And that's what we've seen, incidentally, historically, over the last several years. All of our programs have tried to increase intensity as well.
Representative Garofalo.
Last question for the testifier, and then I have a question for Representative Winkler. So is it correct to say that as you increase the intensity of classes, you'd be able to have people roll off the program quicker, so you would actually, by increasing the intensity of the classes, be able to serve more people? Is that a correct statement?
Mr. Schaefer.
Madam Chair, members, yes, that's exactly right.
Madam Chair, my final question.
Representative Garofalo.
Or Representative Winkler. In looking at this, is the plan to use the one-time portion of the budget surplus to pay for this, or would this be an ongoing appropriation where we'd use the ongoing portion of the surplus to pay for the program?
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, it's my understanding this would be an ongoing appropriation.
So the ongoing portion of the surplus?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you,
to the extent an ongoing surplus exists.
It's there.
Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Mr. Sitram-Hysom.
If I could just add very briefly that one of the things we're very proud of is that we make very good use of the resources we have. And I believe the current annual cost per AB student is, Dr. Schaefer could be more precise, a little bit over $500 per student, which is obviously, you know, far, far less than the foundation aid for K-12. So I don't think there's any doubt that we make very good use and pinch every penny to the very, you know, greatest extent we can.
Thank you. And again, I guess, Mr. Schaefer, I will request the waiting list by county, if I could.
Oh, Madam Chair, we at the department don't keep the waiting lists. Individual programs, if they choose to, keep waiting lists. It's not a requirement of ours from the state level. I know Hub Center in particular has told me that they have a registration once per quarter, I believe, once per semester, one of the systems, and they have decided not to keep waiting lists because they fill up their quota of intake folks and like them to go through the entire unit of instruction the semester or quarter. It's very awkward to bring people in quarter, mid-semester, and that sort of thing. And they individuals referral sheets to nonprofit organizations that are in the area that those students might want to seek services.
Well, we'll have to have a discussion about saying it's going to clear up waiting lists when there aren't waiting lists.
Okay,
because it's a problem. And just so we can get it accurately, I'm just trying to assess what's going on out there. So if you can help me get a better picture of that at another time, I would appreciate that. And we have a question from Representative Kranz. Representative Winkler, though, I wondered if you could explain your visual aid to us.
My apologies, Madam Chair. This is a obviously American flag that was created at the Community Education Center in St. Louis Park, and it was the title, for those of you in the background back here, it says Why We Came to America, and there are stories on each of the stripes and names for the stars explaining various reasons why people came to this country. And it's part of, it was done all through, it was created by ABE students in St. Louis Park, and the message essentially is they came to improve their lives, and ABE was an essential part of that journey.
So that's from your own constituents?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Kranz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had two questions, and it maybe reflects to both bills that we heard today. I think there was an amendment on $1 amount, and then there's a dollar amount on 979, and I don't think they match, and maybe there's a reason for that, Representative Winkler. There's, you know, we did Representative Murphy's bill with the adjustment 2007, which would put it back up to the 37 number, and those two, the one that you have on line 1.13. I mean, I don't know that we need to correct it right here today, and I know that we are going to lay this over to the omnibus bill, but it might be something that, and unless it's a quick answer, you can answer for me.
Representative
Madam Chair, Representative France, I think the only answer would be that we're only changing those sections of statute that this particular bill addresses, and if line page 1, line 13, that number changes through a different bill, that wouldn't really have any impact on what we're doing.
Okay, I was just trying to figure out if I could understand the combination. I can ask that question at another time. I am curious, though, in the second part, section 3, I'm just curious, what is the cost to a person seeking a GED test?
Madam Chair, Representative, the cost varies from about $75 or $80 up to about $110. Individual testing centers have the right to set those costs based on their own costs.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. What would it be here at the Hub Center if they tested here? Do we know?
Yeah.
$95.
You have to
75 to 95.
You have to come to the mic. 75 to 95, depending on if you're sponsored by an agency or not. Yeah, we heard a bill this week on funding it for potentially homeless folks that needed that fee waived. So there is a variety within that. I think we have one more question from Representative Wardlow. And anybody else can jump in here. We have about 5 minutes. And then Representative Bly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll talk fast. if you look on page 2, I'm looking at lines 232, 2.32. And above that, it says for the first preceding fiscal year by more than it limits, the aid won't exceed 8% or $10,000, and it says that again for 2009, but for 2008, remember, increase in aid shall not be limited, and I'm assuming that's because of the 25% increase and trying to play catch-up. My question would be, if it's not limited, is it possible that we could have so many people sign up for the program, we'll use up more money and then we won't have any left over for 2009? Or do you see where I'm going with that question?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative, our aid is paid on a prior year contact hour basis. So the hours that are being generated this year generate funds for next year. So then during 2008, if the growth cap is unlimited for programs, it was designed, as you say, to be able to accommodate that increase in dollars so that growing programs could grow more than the existing 8% and actually capture the additional money that's out there. I certainly would doubt that it's not possible in our formula to grow beyond the resources because we use prior year contact aid. What happens is that contact hour rate simply falls, and that's kind of what's been happening over the last 5 years. Programs have been serving more learners, more and generating more contact hours year after year with essentially the same amount of money. So the rate of reimbursement for those prior year contact hours has gone down, I believe, in the last 5 years or 6 years, from about $7.53 to now $4.81 per prior year contact hour. So it would just simply keep going down the more hours that are being generated.
Mr. Sitkin-Reisman?
Madam Chair, if I could just add one thing. Because of the declining resources, what we've basically been forced to do is to really emphasize those services where we can serve a whole bunch of people at once. So we might be able to have an ESL class with 20 students in it, which generates enough money to support that class. However, the more special needs students and people with individual needs, people with learning disabilities or whatever, that might require one-on-one assistance, or students where they would be native-born people who dropped out of high school for various reasons and really need a lot of outreach to bring them back into the system, we just aren't doing that anymore. So basically, we've just been not able to serve many people who need services because it would take a little bit more resources, because the only way we can generate enough money to keep going is by serving those people, a lot of people at once.
Representative Wardlow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then if you look on line 1.16 on the first page, you see that figure, $47,273,000. Is that, and if you look at this physical analyst sheet we've got, that separate one,
okay.
And if you look under the top box, 2008, it says current law, and then it says House File 979,46,305. Was that correspond to the 47 million? It's just, this is an estimate, and what's in the bill is more accurate, probably?
Well, I'll turn to our fiscal analyst for that. If you can give her a microphone.
Good question, Representative. What it shows in the House Bill 979 is the entitlement number, which is the bigger number, and then what I tried to show is the appropriation number. So that's the actual amount that the state will have to appropriate for that year. Yep. And then the entitlement number is always a little bit, typically a little bit larger. And I can get into that more later if you would like.
Okay.
Yeah, and that addresses actually what Representative Kranz, the difference between House File 979 and then House File Representative Murphy's Bill 613, I believe it was. That one, the number was lower because that's the appropriation versus the entitlement in 979.
I think Ms. Lemire has a comment too.
I think maybe just to clear up for members, the reason why the number is lower in the first year of an increase is because of the 90-10 split. The appropriation includes 10% of the funds from the previous year, and then 90% for that year.
last question, Representative Blythe.
Not really a question, but a comment. You know, we hear a lot about the changing demographics of our state and what the future will look like, and we also hear about returns on investments. And I think in the testimony we've heard this evening, and I know in my own ABE program in Northfield, the cuts have hurt the ability to really help people. But I think we can see not only is there a monetary return in the fact that people are able to go out and get better jobs and improve their lives, but there's also an improvement in human capital in their lives and the aspirations and dreams that they have, and going back to their own country perhaps, and even making a huge difference there. It really is a huge investment and a huge return. So I hope that we can find the money to improve what you can do.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Any closing comments?
No, Madam Chair, I urge your support.
Thank you. Representative Winkler moves House File 979 be considered for inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Finance Learning Bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed? Oh, we don't have to vote. Sorry.
I don't think we have to vote.
Getting late. Okay, it's moved for inclusion. Let me thank the members for coming here off-site and the staff for setting up here. today, especially Sarah Benzkofer and Tricia Kiefer, and also the Pages for being here today. Thank you to the folks that testified. You will never know the impact you have on us. It's very important for us to be out here and to hear your stories, and we will remember your stories as we go through our deliberations at the Capitol. And thank you to the staff here at the Hub Center that helped us set up and that work with ABE. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.